This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
We're back here on a Wednesday. Senator Doris Turner in studios with us for her monthly appearance. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there for 50 or something.
We're not going to talk about age.
All right. We will do that. What are you doing in Decatur today?
Well, I came to visit with you.
Oh, I appreciate that.
And then I'm headed back to Springfield. We are on deadline week. So
Friday. What's that look like? I mean, you know, for folks who aren't there to see mm-hmm. kind of the grind, we get the headlines, we get the stories, yeah. but we're not there to see the process work.
So now, on Friday, all bills have to be out of the Senate and over to the House if we want to see them continue to keep moving. So we are in committees almost all day and then on the floor the rest of the time. I had a success yesterday. I moved my big bill over to the House. It's the bill dealing with the horrific Carlinville funeral home.
This is the negligence, the funeral home negligence, yes.
So I had a piece of legislation that I have really been championing that moved out of the Senate on a 55-0 vote and over
wow.
to the House.
Does that happen very often? 55-0?
55-0. I'm really excited. It was truly a bipartisan bill.
Well, why wouldn't people want to treat the dead with respect and dignity? And if you're responsible in that arena to do that, that you would be held accountable.
Absolutely.
To do that.
And this one was so horrific that really had reverberations throughout the United States.
Yeah.
There were families, East Coast and West Coast and everywhere in between, that were victimized by the actions of Heinz Funeral Home.
Yeah, it's just bad actors, right?
Bad actors.
It doesn't matter what business you're in, but there's nothing more sacred or more important, I think, to people than the it's hard to imagine people taking advantage of that.
It really is. And you know, these are people that thought they had done the right thing and thought that they had lived up to their loved ones' wishes. And then to find out, you know, that didn't happen. And then take into consideration that there are also religious concerns that, come into play.
So what would this Senate bill do, you know, now that it's going over to the House? And I'm assuming it will pass there. Or
I'm hopeful.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
But I mean, because it was such a bipartisan mm-hmm. thing, which we don't have all that yeah. often anymore. What would it do to, you know, regulate and keep this behavior from happening?
So a couple of things. It would mandate a unique identifier so that we would know who that person is.
You know what? You just made a good point. We should go back and explain. There were, more than 60 families that
yeah.
received the wrong remains. And, I mean, it was like just, I don't know how all that happened, but this would put in place safety precautions that would hopefully keep this from happening.
Absolutely.
Again. Requirements.
Absolutely. There were over 60 families that did receive the wrong remains, and most of those were cremations.
Yeah.
So there's no way that you can go back and fix that. It's over. It's done. But there would be a unique identifier that would follow the person from the time that they die until their remain to their final resting place, so that you would know where that person is all along the way. The other thing that it would also do is part of what happened in that situation, and then in a follow up situation that we learned about, is that the conditions in that funeral home were just horrific. There were bodies that had been laying there for months.
Yeah,
that nothing had happened. And so when a complaint is filed with Department of Professional Regulations, they have 10 days
okay
to come in. And
you would think this would be a fairly regulated business to begin with, but sometimes you find out that's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm.
What's the debate with food deserts and what's going on? You know, we have a lot of rural areas in our community, in your district. The one thing I learned in all of our efforts over the years with the food drive is that, you know, people have this thing where they think poverty or food insecurity only exists in like large inner city neighborhoods. It exists everywhere.
It exists everywhere.
And sometimes those places where it exists, there's fewer resources.
Absolutely. So there are a number of pieces of legislation making their way through the General Assembly dedicated to food deserts and what we do about food insecurity. And I'm very excited about it. And all of those are going through basically on a bipartisan basis as well. So Senator Kaler and I have been working together on a couple of pieces of legislation that would put more money into a program that we passed out of the General Assembly last year that would provide funding for those farmers and farming that have the excess food, and then work on how we can get it there. And I have a piece of legislation that I'm really excited about that would provide funding for farmer-owned grocery stores.
Okay.
And they're small, and they're in the rural areas, and people have access. It's almost like a roadside farmer's market in a building and not on the side of
but
the road.
But you can incentivize that by...
Yes.
Yeah.
And the great thing about it is that it provides food and addresses the food insecurities. Also, is an economic engine, because there's one in Rigston, and that's where this idea came from.
Okay, what does that look like?
And so she has an operation where she's a farmer, so she has her what she has on her farm, the meats and things, but she gets items from farmers and other entities from around her.
Okay.
So everything that she sells in her market or small grocery store is from a local person. So you're talking about, so that's kind of an economic engine that's driving, and she has...
It's also healthier food.
Yes, healthier food. So she has beef and pork and chicken and...
Produce,
mm-hmm. Baked goods, honey, milk, cheeses, and all of these things are locally grown and produced. So, you know, if we can replicate that, that would go a long way to addressing the food insecurity, but also be an economic engine for these local rural communities. And I think we have to start thinking outside the box.
There, that would
these
be
things. Yeah,
yeah.
Because everybody doesn't have a county market or a Kroger or Ruler Foods that they can go to.
And it's getting harder and harder.
Yes.
I know that's some people may not think that's the case, but it absolutely is.
Oh, it absolutely is.
All right. Well, if folks want to chat with somebody here locally or talk to your office in any way, how do they do that?
So, you know, I have an office in Decatur, yep. And so we're there full service. Just reach out to us in any way. And then we also have, of course, the office, two offices in Springfield. And I get over here a lot. So I really have immersed myself into this community. So you may just see me anywhere.
How do you work with your other Central Illinois folks? I mean, we have a pretty divided, you know, we got red representation, we got blue representation.
And everything in between.
And everything in between. But we seem so far apart today. Mm-hmm. Like, I you know, more so than it used to be. You know, we appreciate you coming in and talking about what you're doing in Springfield. But how do you get along with the other area reps and senators and... Do you have regular conversations?
I do. You know, it's of course Sue and I talk a lot because we've been, you know, on this journey together for a long time, long before I got into the Senate. And then there's the Turner Caucus, Sally Turner,
yeah,
who is up in represents the Lincoln area. Her and I talk a lot on the floor, off the floor, and have conversations when we're not in session. And we're actually working on a project together because there's some closures potentially in the Lincoln area with regard to corrections.
Right.
So we've been working very, very closely on that. And, you know, I run into Dan Calkins all the time, and I'm really going to miss him. I know you may not believe it, but I am going to miss him.
That may be the strangest thing I've heard all day today.
Yeah.
I mean, don't have any reason not to believe you. Why?
Yeah, but we do. Whenever, you know, it's not anything that we schedule or, you know, plan to meet up, but it just seems that we run into each other all the time. And whenever we do, it's always very pleasant.
Well, that's great. But do you guys ever have any conversations about what's good for the constituents?
You know, we do. And I think that Dan and I are on one accord when we talk about and want to see what's good for this community, because we both care a lot about and love this community, and we want to see it thrive. We want to see it be the best that he can be. Sometimes I think that there's two different, I'm not saying this specifically about Dan, Representative Calkins, but sometimes there are two different people. There's the person that's on the floor and doing what they think they need to do for their constituents, but also for their colleagues. And then there's the person that is away from all of that, that's really working behind the scenes to move things along.
Yeah, I guess I just, it used to be, or at least maybe I have a romantic, notion that it used to be that when you were elected, it didn't matter whether you were a Democrat or Republican, mm-hmm. you were there to represent all of your constituency, not just the people that voted for right. you, but the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it happens on both sides. I don't think it's a one side or the other deal. Mm-hmm. But do you feel like it's your responsibility to not only represent the people who put yard signs up and walked in parades with you, but you're there to represent everybody in your district?
Absolutely. And I have always, my time on the county board, time on the city council, and now my time in the Senate, I have always represented a district that was not a over-the-top Democratic district. I've always represented a district that was a real hybrid district that oftentimes had more Republican voters than Democratic voters. So that's always been the way that I have kind of conducted myself. And I will say that my success in this arena is due to that. And I am very intentional about bringing people who don't think like me or look like me or share my politics into my conversations so that I don't have blinders on and I'm not just thinking about things in terms of the conversations. I'm having those conversations and asking for counsel from people from all across the spectrum. And I think that we're better for that.
Yeah.
I think that my, if you look at my legislation, I think it's better because I do have that broad view.
Well, we need more of that, for sure. Congratulations, 55.
55-0.
That just doesn't happen very yeah. often in politics anymore. Yeah. Senator Turner, always a pleasure.
It's always nice. Thank you.
All right, have a great day.
You too.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.